It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. I was just informed that tonight I was on Channel 11 as well as being on WGN at the same time. Like, who could say that? Pretty much everybody in media at this day and age, right?
Are you one of the Ponce kids?
I am, Justin Ponce.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. I'm little known Ponce. No, but the Mark Baser show, I recorded a bit with him a while back where we were sitting at the bar. And I think this is the bit they ran where it was video where we both couldn't answer the question. We just could only ask questions as hosts. So everything, that was a bit. And it took like an hour for us to figure it out because it was almost like a word game. You know, we just kept going back and now that doesn't, how do I get to answer a question with a question over and over and over. So anyway, that was on tonight while we were talking with Kate Baldwin.
No, who wouldn't want to see two hosts just ask each other stuff?
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
That's
so relatable. So relatable. TJ Shanoff in studio with me right now. TJ is a comedian, improviser, director, musical director, worked for Second City for years, 20 plus years in comedy. His show, The Power of Prom, it's an 80s parody musical. He's co-written with Ed Furman and
Pat Reedy.
Yeah,
directed by the great Mick Napier.
There you go. Is on stage running till June, and also tomorrow night a new show, Shirley LeMay's My Solo Show of All Duets.
Yeah,
which is performed by Rebecca Soane, directed by Rich Soane, and it opens tomorrow, runs through the end of May. You're the musical director, and you're acting in this show.
I am. I do a song or two and a couple little bits.
These are both at the Annoyance Theater.
Yeah, they are.
Welcome to the show. Good to see you.
It's great to be here. It's good to see you. Those of us who know you from the improv community are pretty damn proud of what you're doing.
Oh,
so
thank you, buddy.
To see it.
Well, let's talk about the duet show because the idea of my solo show of duets.
Uh-huh.
I can only imagine. Talk about where this idea came from. It's a brilliant idea.
Thank you. And it's a pretty fun show. It's the third run of it in Chicago. This is a brief run. We're doing the next three Saturdays at The Annoyance with Rebecca Soane, Second City alumna.
She's great.
Who's brilliant. And Rich Soane, who's also brilliant, directed the show. Rebecca and I have been working together for many years. And one thing we started doing, just, you know how you do bits? You're familiar with the concept of bits.
I think you and
your audience would get that. We were on a Second City corporate gig about 3 years ago and just started doing a bit about a crazy woman who couldn't make it in Broadway theater because her hook was just wanting to sing duets by her damn self. we both found ourselves about a year and a half ago. Excuse me. You know, you get to that point in your career. Rebecca and I are both in our 40s at this point. And a lot of the shows you would do in your 20s at I.O. and all that stuff that I've done and you've done and we've all done, you stop doing those. The real fun ideas that require, you know, a lot of work and making no money kind of get less appetizing when you get married and have a condo
and
you got to get the expensive cat food. And very true. Well, sweetie, let's not buy the 59-cent stuff and we can give the cat something that's $1.60.
You can't get away with it anymore. Like, babe, it's Wednesday at 9. It's a huge night. I mean, that's I got to be there. It's a huge show. We got load in at 5 and it starts at midnight. Like, it's all the end.
Sweetie, that's the way it works. There's nothing wrong with being 40 and doing a 9 p.m. Wednesday improv show, right? That's normal. Oh, it's for free. I'm losing money because I'm buying scotch for everybody. But so Rebecca and I just had been doing this idea backstage doing corporate shows to keep ourselves sane. And eventually it just kind of hit both of us. The timing was right for us to say, you know what, let's just do it. If one of us gets something huge or can't really find time for this, we're both free to back out. And I got to tell you, we both love the idea so much that the minute we started working on this and brought Rich in, we said, we have to do it. Annoyance was generous enough to give us a run. We did a night at the Pit in New York, which is Ali Farnakian's great theater.
Right there, yeah.
And we're doing a 3-week run now. We're actually going to do a truncated run. My wife and I are due with our first at the beginning of
Congratulations.
June.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of laying low the summer, but we're going to do three shows in Saturday nights in May at the Annoyance.
It's going to get a lot harder for your Wednesday at 9 o'clock improv show. It's going to be a lot harder now.
Oh, well, I'm going to leave my wife the day after the baby's born. You know, things you don't say on the air. I want to make that clear. Sweetie, I love you. If the lawyer's around, I apologize. But yeah, so it's something we're going to do up again in the fall. And it's a weird hybrid of actual musical theater. I describe this to people as watching a very talented woman who thinks she's more talented than she is have a nervous breakdown through musical theater classics. All the songs are ones you know and love. Songs from Grease and Fiddler and company, but they're performed by someone who's just gone crazy.
She's doing all the parts.
And one of the great lines that Rich Zone, the director, came up with is, "You can't stop her from singing at you." And that's, if you come see it, it's basically like being assaulted via musical theater. So we like it because it hits on a couple levels. Right. It's a great way to get to bring musical theater songs that people don't think of in the sketch and improv realm to this community and tweak it in a way that feels satirical and stupid and we think very fun.
Well, I mean, you've done a lot of musical comedy here in Chicago.
It's my favorite.
Second City and all. But yeah, you have a real great understanding of how musical theater works, all sort of everything about, you know, Broadway hits and all that, and you're able to use that in your comedy, which a lot of people in Chicago, they just don't have that background. They can't play the piano.
And it's thank you for saying that. I also can't play the piano. I've learned to fake it for many, many years. You know, for me, musical theater was not something I didn't major in college. It's something I've wanted to do professionally. I went to this great little theater camp in Wisconsin, still around, called Horand Camp. And it was like half the day in the 8-week camp up in a lake in Wisconsin. Half the day is musical theater and half the day is traditional camp stuff. You know, softball, capture the flag, all that stuff. And it made musical theater fun. The camp was run by these socialists where everybody got to be the lead. So if you do Fiddler, there's like six Tevyas. So the fat kid who would never be the star in a high school production gets to do one of the songs in Fiddler. Then he recedes to the chorus and so on and so forth. And it basically, it's a very improv-y ethos before I even knew what that was, because it teaches you that it's just as important being part of the ensemble as it is being the quote-unquote star. So that fostered a love of musical theater, but a knowledge that I didn't want to do it straight. I wanted to find a way to tweak it and twist it, and I've been lucky that my career in Chicago has afforded me the opportunity to get to do it.
I've always been amazed by people who have musical background in improv, because we've seen Baby Wants Candy.
Sure, or great group.
I mean, so many improv shows that are making up music on the spot, which to me is, I watch, you know, Ross Bryant. I watch some people who I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys just rapped the entire thing. I can't do that. I can't do that at all. Like, I feel like every time I'm like, there's a screw loose that I can't figure that stuff out. And you got you and others in town effortlessly.
Well, it's an acquired skill. I mean, all good improv takes a lot of work, and you can see some very talented people start off and not be very good. But you know, it's like anything. You got to start from someplace, and you got to be committed to it, and you learn what you're doing.
But you also have to have some background in music, right? You got to know when to come in, when not to come in, that kind of stuff. It helps you, obviously.
It certainly helps. I would say to the other side of that coin, arguably one of the best improvisers I've ever seen, a guy named TJ Jagodowski. I know you know him well. You would not call him a music improviser, but I've seen him step out and do things in a song that have been tremendous. So you can do it at a high level. You're probably not going to do Baby Wants Candy or the show. I did a show called Blank the Musical, which is a similar improvised thing.
Right.
You're probably not going to do something like that if you don't have a good voice, but you can step in and contribute musically even if you're not some trained singer.
Well, the show is Shirley LaMay, right? Mm-hmm. Shirley LaMay is my solo show of all duets. It's the next three Saturdays at the Annoyance Theater. Rebecca Sohn is the star, directed by Rich Sohn. T.J. Shanoff is the musical director. He's also acting in the show. And then we'll take a break. We'll talk about Power of Prom right after the break. All right, T.J. Shanoff's here on The Download. Stay with us. Before the show started tonight, I was looking, before the rain came down, there were limos lined up. All white stretch limos, kids getting out with their Sunday best, Friday night best, tuxedos, just ready to take on life. It's prom night.
Prom night. It's raining on prom night.
It's raining on
prom night.
Minor
song from Greece came true tonight. The one that got cut from the film.
It's raining on prom night.
Yeah, see, you're a musical. Musically improvised.
We're
breaking barriers tonight.
T.J. Shanoff in studio with me. The Power of Prom, an 80s parody musical. It's been on stage at the Annoyance for a while now, and it's running till June.
Yeah.
This is the night. Do you have people who come to Power of Prom to see the show that are like coming from their prom?
a year ago, we had people come dressed up. You know, we don't have a lot of prom kids at the Annoyance. I think kids that age know to be afraid of Mick. So I just don't think Mick Napier, of course, I don't think they show up. But yeah, we had multiple nights last year, especially we actually got a really nice write-up in the Tribune last summer about the show. And after that, we had people coming dressed up as they were in an 80s prom, which was really fun. And it was only a small fraction of the audience, so everybody felt weird. It's the age old thing of the costume party where only two people think it's a costume party. But it was really fun, and it's an 80s parody musical. And you know, there's, especially in the comedy community in Chicago, you can take or leave parodies. I've written a bunch of parody shows. I've written shows that are called Pastiche, which the song, like Spinal Tap, sounds like every heavy metal song. The Ruddles sound like Beatles songs. That's a fun idiom in which to write.
Right.
But the decision was made. This was actually produced originally by the Second City. We developed this under the Second City Theatricals banner a couple years ago. And the decision was made at the time that why write a song that sounds like Don't You Forget About Me or Power of Love or Manic Monday for this? Let's just go full bore and make it the songs you know and love with weird, sometimes offensive, but mostly family-friendly lyrics.
annoyance.
It's the annoyance theater. And it's what I love about it, too, is... again, I'm criticizing myself a bit because it is a parody show, but it's got that annoyance theater spirit. It's part Second City, it's part annoyance theater, and it's a little bit
what does that
Rock
mean?
Of Ages.
For the people who are out there who've never been to the Annoyance Theater or Second City or Improv Olympic or any of that stuff, to say the annoyance, you know, to have a little bit of annoyance in it, what does that mean?
The annoyance has always been, I don't want to say more cutting edge, but more adventurous and less concerned with how's this going to play in the press, how's this going to play in the media. The tourists don't flock here to come to the annoyance. I'm not passing judgment on that. I think tourists would be thrilled to come see a show at the annoyance. Mm-hmm. But Second City's been an institution for so long that while the shows aren't necessarily any safer, it's a safer bet for a lot of people. Oh, we know the Second City. That's where John Belushi came from. It's where Jack McBrayer came from, Tina Fey, and so on and so forth. A lot of the famous people came from Annoyance as well, but Annoyance is known as a little more the avant-garde, experimental. Right. Only in the last couple of years, I'm in the middle of my career, God willing, comedy-wise, and I've only recently become part of the Annoyance family after admiring it from the outside for a long time. And it's wonderful because it really is all about the work. It's not about the peripheral stuff. It's about if you have an idea and you're behind that idea, these are the talented people who are going to help you execute it to the best of their abilities. Even if you think it's the dumbest or weirdest idea, if you're behind it, we're going to do it and we're going to do it well. And that's what makes Power of Prom so fun, is it's polished, but it's weird polished.
But I was going to say, I mean, there's a tremendous history of parody musicals at the Annoyance. I mean, whether it be Coed Prison Sluts or Splatter or any, there's been so many musicals that have been done at the Annoyance Theater, even before it moved to where it's at now.
Yep.
So Power of Prom kind of fits into that, you know, that history.
Well, yes, and that's one of the reasons back when it was being developed at Second City, the talk was let's incubate it at Annoyance because it doesn't quite have the glare of being a Second City type show. We opened at Annoyance. It just didn't work out with extending it with Second City's ownership of it. So that was an interesting process, too, kind of having one foot in the Second City door, another foot in the Annoyance door, and kind of seeing that door close.
Did they let you have it?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, that's great.
I think, you know, the relationships that Ed Furman, McNapier, Pat Reedy, and I have all had with Second City for many years.
Right. You guys do both. I mean,
yeah,
Ed's a writer over there right now. Right?
He's part of that full-time, there's a writer's room over there now, which is another new development. But yeah, they were cool with it. And initially there was some, oh, that's a shame, because we had talked about doing this on a big tour and on a major scale. You know, it's parody. There's some legal issues. I ran into this many years ago with a parody show I did, another 80s. You listen, if you need an 80s parody, you know who to call. It's a nice way of calling myself a hack. I did a show with a guy named Rich Tellerico.
He does weddings and he'll do parodies.
And occasional bar mitzvahs. Yeah, I want to make that, not bat mitzvahs. I'm too conservative for that. But there was a parody show I did with a guy named Rich Tellerico, who went on to write for Mad TV. He does Key and Peele now, called The Roof Is on Fiddler. And that was basically...
I remember that show.
Thank you. We did Fiddler on the Roof straight up. I mean, we maybe cut a couple lines and one or two of the insignificant daughters. But we basically gave you authentic Fiddler on the Roof, but we pulled every song out and replaced it with an 80s song that felt relevant to the plot. So Matchmaker was Like a Virgin. Tradition was That's Just the Way It Is. All that kind of stuff. And
I'm trying to figure out where you're getting copyright problems from. Would it be from Fiddler, or is it from the 80s songs you were using?
The copyright problems we got from Fiddler came from the representation of the book writer, I believe.
Oh, so it was a fiddler writer.
The book of the lyrics,
yeah.
Yes.
It's
because
like, how dare you?
That, well, and it's true, you know, because you've, in theory, you've got people who go see Fiddler on the Roof and think Break My Stride is part of the score, you know, I mean, which it should have been. With all due respect to Sunrise
you're
Sunset.
Just improving. Why right? can't they see that?
We're making it better, just is what we're doing. So, but again, that's one of the reasons why, and if people are fans of the 80s, I feel a little gross plugging the show in a gross way, but we love Power Prom because we feel like it combines all the tropes from the John Hughes movies, all those songs, everything's just twisted enough. It's like the 80s on cocaine,
right.
Which I think they were.
TJ, it's when prom was prom.
When men were men.
When men were, when prom was prom, and you didn't have all these, like, you have to go, now you have to do the prom announcement, or not announcement, an invitation, or what do you call it, the proposal.
Yes, there's a prom proposal.
Yeah, you don't have to do any of that. You just this is a time when prom was prom.
You would just go, you just, you know, drink a Jolt Cola, and, you know, take some Tylenol, hope it wouldn't kill you. and that shows my age right there. Coming up next, I'll talk about the Tony Randall vehicle, Love, Sydney. I mean, this is, I'm just going to give references that nobody remembers. We can talk Grease 2, whatever you need. No, but it's a fun show, and I'm proud that The Annoyance resurrected it. I hope it becomes a big prom season tradition for them.
Okay, so let's take a break for the news. Yep. We come back. Let's talk about your other life. I mean, you did radio. You did morning radio. You did sports radio for a long time.
I did.
You also did the show at CKG with Susanna Holman.
Yeah.
We'll just shoot the breeze, talk about the Cubs, the Sox, some other stuff, and do a little sports radio.
We'll yeah, let's talk sports radio business next.
TJ Shanoff, the Power of Prom is on stage at the Annoyance Theater through June, right?
Through June, yes. Hopefully we'll be extended, but through June.
What night and time?
Power of Prom is every Saturday night. Shirley LeMay's every Friday night. It's kind of a fun thing for the first time in my life. I got two shows of The Annoyance on Fridays and Saturdays, and I'm thrilled.
How about that? Look at you taking over The Annoyance.
And I'm making no money, so life's great.
It's a download here on WGN, sitting in with old WGN 1995 intern.
Summer of 95, I was the general programming intern.
Wow.
I once angered Ian Punnett. That's made me pretty happy. I didn't know it.
Who'd you work? Who was exclusively you were working with?
I was the general intern, so I came in. I had a little bit of Spike, Ian Punnett. I worked under Randy Eccles, I think was his name at the time.
Yeah.
Tisa Lasorde at the time was here.
Kathy and Judy were here.
Oh yeah. Kathy and Judy were here. I helped do, there was a Saturday morning kid show that I got to help edit as part of the internship.
All right.
It was, it was a great time. It was like 21 years ago.
I mean, it's really great to have you back in the building.
Yeah, man, thank you. It's taken 21 years for the damn invite, but thank you for having me.
You know, when we think WGN, we think TJ.
Yeah.
And we're reminded every day. I mean, in the staff meetings, we're like, do as Shanoff did.
With the exception of Ron Santo, I feel like I left more of a mark on the station than anybody has.
Well, the Walk of Fame is coming up here in like 2 weeks. You should be out there.
Well, I keep scribbling my name over Wally Phillips, and I know it's not right.
I know it's not right.
It's my tag. You know.
They got the statue over here just on the other side of Brick House, like right over here.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got like these little bricks in front of it. It's not the Walk of Fame. The Walk of Fame is around the corner. And I don't know who's in charge of that statue, but they're building the Apple Store right here.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, and it's really close. There's like one of the bricks is like a little loose and a little bit on the edge. And I'm like, this is disrespectful.
Right.
Like, I was like, this is like a sign of the times where like Apple is just like, shaking the bricks loose of like what the city was built on.
What a metaphor.
Wow.
I think you just solved radio. That's
I really did.
Pretty impressive.
Speaking of radio, I mean, you had a career in radio. You did sports radio at Sporting News Network for a long time. You were the morning guy, right?
I did I was a co-host on the morning show called Murray in the Morning for 3 years. Sporting News Radio is based out of Northbrook. We were on after the, I'm allowed to mention other stations on the air, right?
It's an after 9 o'clock. You can show boobs and mention other radio stations.
Well, can you hear the zipper going unzip? The score after they left the 820 signal many years ago, Sporting News Radio took that over. And then after that stopped being sports, I wasn't on in Chicago. But like, Yeah, man, we were huge in like parts of Kentucky. We were big in small markets.
But it was a national network that was came out of Chicago. I mean, you were in the morning. Talk about like what you had to do as a I'm fascinated by sports radio people. I mean, were you purposely agitative, I guess, on purpose, like trying to rile up listeners and things like that?
I think just my general demeanor was enough to rile. And this is like in the early age of internet. This is, you know, not that early, but like 2002, 2003. And I got some pretty hateful comments before hateful comments were a thing. I'm kind of a trailblazer in hate, you know. So, no, it was interesting because I'm no athlete. You know, I grew up in Chicago under, you know, the 85 Bears, the 84 Cubs were the first team I loved, all those Jordan Bulls teams. So you follow enough, you know enough. And my role on the show wasn't to be the hardcore sports guy. It was to kind of be the comedy idiot. So there was a guy named Bruce Murray who was the sports talk guy.
Yeah.
Me and an old buddy of mine named Kevin Fleming, who's another improviser, he was on for the first year and a half or so. Then he moved on to do other stuff. And then me and there were a couple different women, a woman named Tanya Cologne, another Elizabeth Hess. And the women were kind of brought, it was like a hot talk thing on a sports network to kind of, we would interview people who were on Survivor and then talk to Emmett Smith. And at the time I had no patience for talking to people from Survivor. And I'm the one who's like, hey, listen, no guy wants to hear this. Can we please break down the Washington Bullets, you know, and. turns out management told me to shut up, and that's fine. But yeah,
are you bummed when you watch or you look at now sports radio or even sports TV where it's like there's so much more technology at your fingertips? I was watching ESPN yesterday, and they're like, "Let's go to the big board," and they're like swiping like it's a huge iPad. You know, like the Spurs shot 38%. I'll take a look at this.
Yeah, it's the CNNization of sport. You know. As a radio consumer and as a sports TV and radio consumer, I don't have much patience for the quote unquote hot take. You know, the kind of, if LeBron James doesn't win a championship this year, he's the third worst player of all time. Call up. It's just kind of, and that's kind of.
That's radio. That's sports radio,
That's sports radio. And when the show came to an end, I did another couple years locally here in town on the old CKG, rest in peace, with Susanna Homan, who now editor of Chicago Magazine.
She was on the show about a month ago.
I adore her. We got to work together on and off for about a year and a half or so. And I did some little things here and there. I still love doing radio. But I kind of found I had some experiences where when Sporting News collapsed and then CKG collapsed and then being in this market already, I was already established at Second City. So I wasn't going to go to Peoria or Des Moines. All due respect to, I'm not bashing small markets, but I'd been in Chicago already in my early 30s. I was pretty set doing Second City. It's one of those things I loved doing. I miss doing it. I don't know that I have the fortitude at this point to, quote unquote, start anew.
When you see this kind of beginning of a sports season, when we talk about the Cubs and the White Sox, as a guy who used to do sports radio, is this the kind of thing where you're like, oh, I miss it. I wish I was back because there's so much to talk about.
I had to go. Yes. And I had to go on the air the mornings after game 6 and 7, the Bartman game and game 7 and 03. And I had a Yankee fan in the studio and a White Sox fan, and I was like angry to the point of being unprofessional. If I could go back and do something different, I would go back and handle my business a little bit more and not smell like Makers at 6 in the morning. But yeah, I do miss a little bit. Certainly all the stuff that when the Bulls were drafting Kirk Heinrich, this is a little later than Heinrich, this is like the mid 2000s, like 05, 06. CKG had me on as a Bulls draft expert, and that was it was a role that I'd always wanted to do, and then I got there and I'm like, this stinks. I can't do bits because nobody wants to hear the draft, because the Bulls were in CKG that year. Nobody wants to hear me, you know, the idiot, be like, yeah, sure, Dalibor Bagarić. I don't know if he can shoot, but his name is terrible. And so that opportunity kind of came and went. But yeah, there's certainly times you talk sports with your buddies, and that's what good sports radio is making it feel like you're in a room with your friends. Right. I do miss that a little bit.
Chicago's got great sports radio. I mean, it does. I mean, it's always been a market. But when you see, I always wonder about this question. Like, you see more and more when a player does poorly.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of when the Bears imploded with Mark Trestman.
Yeah.
It was a good example the last time this kind of when it came up, where there was like almost You know, they kept saying all the sports talk in town. Or, you know, I always say that like NFL today, the sports talk is upset with what's happening with Jay Cutler. It almost becomes that, you know, sports radio, sports talk has been demonized in a way that like you guys are you know, everyone's a blowhard. You know, everyone's a blowhard and they're making it bad for the sports in that town.
Well, you know, I hate to sound like a fuddy-duddy, and that was hyphenated in case you were curious. I do feel like there's some truth in that, and it's not that different than what's happening with a lot of partisan political radio, where if someone's just screaming about something, that's good talk radio is discussion. But you know, I know you talk to people, you don't talk at people, and therein lies the difference. Sports radio, where I feel like I'm being yelled at, I don't have any patience for. Sports radio, where I feel like, wow, these are cool people engaging in a cool conversation that I don't need to agree with everything,
right?
But I at least want to know that they're respecting my intelligence.
Okay, so let's talk sports before we go. First off, is it weird to not have the Bulls and the Blackhawks in the playoffs in May?
You know, any other year, sure, but, and I say this as a dyed-in-the-wool Cubs fan, all due respect to the White Sox, too, and their start, right. But it's tough to miss the Bulls and Blackhawks when the Bears had such a great draft. Light up the phones. I can't name one draft pick. In a spring when you have the Cubs playing like they're playing, they won again today, and I think the White Sox won tonight,
did,
too.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to miss a Bulls and Blackhawks team that probably weren't going to do much damage through late May and early June anyway.
Right. Well, Bulls, I mean, I don't know. I can't fathom in this day and age a team missing the NBA East playoffs. Like, I just said, the top, you just said to be in the top eight teams.
They hate each other. That, I mean, I have no inside knowledge, but I watch enough games to know, like, you never, I don't think I ever saw Butler or Rose pass the ball to each other. One of them would dribble it up, dribble, pass it into Gasol. If Gasol didn't shoot it, he'd kick it back out to Butler. Or, listen, don't give Aaron Brooks a basketball ever. There's 22 seconds left on the shot clock and he's jacking up a three. That doesn't go in. They were an unlikable team, I think, because they didn't like each other. And you can tell, Jordan and Pippen didn't love each other early on, but they respected each other's game so much that they made it work, especially after Jordan came back from retirement.
That's so interesting, too, because you think about the best sports duos that are going today. I mean, you think of even LeBron James and Kevin Love are a good example, or what we see. I mean, you don't really see, I guess it's Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, they're buddies, but there just seems to, they're not always friends. They're competing for the limelight. But there's a respect, and they understand that they both have to be on the same page. And maybe we didn't see that with a Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler.
Well, because they both thought they were the man at different times, and neither wanted to defer to the other one. I mean, you saw going all the way back to the two iterations of the Lakers. Kareem didn't like Magic, and Shaq didn't like Kobe. And they both, in their respective Laker teams, won a ton of championships. So it's not a matter of liking who you're playing with. It's a matter of, I respect you enough and I'm confident enough in my own talent where, you know what, you want to take over tonight, do it. When the Bulls lost to Cleveland, not this year, but in the playoffs a year ago, May, that last game, like...
They'd lost by like 30 points or something.
Yeah, Rose didn't shoot. It was like, wait, what are you trying to prove? It's very frustrating as a Chicago sports fan to watch, but I think the Bears are going to be better, so we get the fall. The Blackhawks will be back. I think the Bulls can be back, too.
Do they have to do? We're only talking about the Bulls because the Cubs and Sox are doing great, but what do they have to... I mean, someone's got to go?
Well... Yeah, and I think that it's going to be Rose's contract expiring after the season. You're going to have one more year of yikes, and I think they're going to have to rebuild. Butler's being paid too much to move him, and Hoiberg, who may be the real problem, is being paid too much to fire him. Plus,
since he's on an expiring contract, is there a possibility we see a trade deadline kind of thing with Derrick Rose? If it goes sour again, do you go, okay, he's going to ship to Minnesota with Tibbs?
I don't want to pretend to be some NBA insider. But I'm being serious. I think you can probably trade Rose for Steph Curry and Draymond Green. Maybe throw in a 3-4 second round picks, maybe an Andrew Bogut or just Andrew Bogut's jersey. But I think the whole thing's, and again, I don't want to pretend like I'm not Chad Ford. I'm not some insider. But yes, it is viable that Rose and maybe the ghost of Kirk Heinrich gets traded for Draymond, Clay, Steph, and bring back Curry. He can shoot.
Yeah, he probably shoot better than Aaron Brooks.
Yes, he can.
All right, so let's wrap on the Cubs.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the one thing we were talking about, Pete's a big Cubs fan back there.
And hey, Pete.
And one of the things that we're talking about is just the expectations.
Yeah.
There seems to be, I mean, there's never really been a start like this in Cubs history where they're out to such a big win. But as fans, are we now building it up to the point, like, if they don't win, like, they don't sweep in the World Series, curse.
Oh, we're doomed. I mean, this is going to be the most depressing late summer and fall of our, not since 04, when they, like, remember when the Cubs were a shoo-in to make the playoffs again the year after 03, and then they
that
just,
was
like,
the worst.
Wouldn't it be fun to lose every game against, I think it was the Mets and the Reds, and then Kent Merkers yelling at Steve Stone, you know, like, everything just fell off the rails. I've been a Cub fan since 1984. I'm not getting excited. Talk to me at the All-Star break. Okay. And it's not that I'm not enjoying this.
It's fun, but you're keeping your expectations in check.
You have to. And I'm the guy who took a couple years. We mentioned our mutual friend, Matt Spiegel. We're just bringing up people on other stations.
That's okay.
And that's all right. But Matt, a couple years ago, before all this turned around, he and I were in a gig together, and he called me a meathead. He said, I expected better of you. You're a meathead because I'm saying, trade all these young guys. Go ahead and be the Marlins of the 97 and 03. Buy me a World Series. I'll never watch a Cub game again. And I lost faith in what Theo was doing. And last year and now this year, I'm being proven wrong, and I'm thrilled to be proven wrong. It is good validation to know that I'm an idiot. And sometimes it takes the Cubs to reaffirm.
That's the key when it comes to being a good sports radio guy, right?
Yeah, that's right. Be stupid and be proud.
TJ Shanoff in studio with me tonight. Great to see you, man.
Justin, thanks for having me on. Pete, thank you. I love the show. You got a lot of people who are real proud of you and who really like what you're doing. I'm not one of them, but I'm kidding. It's a great show, and I wish you the best. Thank you.
Thanks, TJ.